Any other questions? There is one.
David Bovell, I've got a scientific background and a long-term interest in multimedia and internet publications going back 12, 14 years. I've heard a lot about the evidence for why scientists should publish, and very briefly saw this slide at the end about the reasons they actually give why they don't rationally do what they should do. I would like to see that slide up a bit more to comment on it. From my perspective, I've spent a number of years designing CD-ROM and online scientific publications, and feel quite would like to know more about what the panel thinks about why people, what the issues, how many people are reading this, and I know why people should publish, but what I want to know is the quality of the publications, how readable they are, the end user requirements, do people want to read things that are on the screen, is this an issue, what the use of interfaces, what the quality of these online archives are. I know that FTP archives aren't particularly friendly, and I know from an institutional background the reluctance of the higher echelons of institutions to take advantage of technology. These things seem self-evident to me, but I haven't heard anything that's been talked about that address or discuss those issues. Is this an issue or not?
Okay. Given we have just 5 minutes left, I would like to give each of the panelists an occasion to answer that question, because it's one of the basic questions, how do we assure quality, and which is the most efficient way to do so. So please, maybe you start on that.
This I 80 years ago, many years ago, I thought about the whole preprints and afterwards the so-called reprints or poster prints, and all this can be if put it to the to the internet, it can be archived in some trick, in some way, as I mentioned, to say to share the copyright problem with the commercial publishers. If we do self-archiving, but I try to understand your question. The question is the quality of communication. I mean, the free access to the papers, to get the papers from the authors. The free publishing is one aspect. And to build up a database of abstracts, and even the authors themselves can submit the new corrections and updates that will enhance the quality of communication among scientists. And there are some strategies to realize free access and open access.
I didn't understand the question. I'll try to repeat what I think you asked. I can't tell whether you asked why do scientists publish, or why would scientists want their publications to be openly accessible online, or what is the quality of the online publications that they self-archive. Why do scientists... I'm not sure which one of these you meant, or was it something else?
Yeah, sorry about that. It's a bit confusing. It's more the question that didn't seem to be answered from my point of view is why do they read? I know why the motivation for them publishing in theory is, but from my point of view as a doctor studying, I would read, for instance, during my break over a coffee.
Okay, now I understand. Why do they use publications? Because research is building on the work of others, and you need to know what other people do in order to know what to build on it.
Sorry, that's the reason why they should do it. I'm talking about the psychological, sociological reasons why they actually don't. You've pointed out the problem.
I didn't say they don't. I said they don't self-archive. You're talking on the user end, and I'm talking about the author end.
Is that because people don't read these self-archives?
No, that isn't the reason. I gave you data over there that indicates that five times as many people read the self-archived ones as the non-self-archived ones. So that's not the reason.
I'll try and answer my own question. It might be the easier to do, which is why don't people still self-archive in the sense that I think Stéphane has done a very good demonstration of the fact that there are advantages, a lot of advantages in doing so. One must never forget that the whole science system is not only a competitive system, it's a power structure with a hierarchy of scientists. One must never forget that the part of the power that is being distributed inside science is not based purely on intellect and simple personal value. It's also based on access to resources. One must never forget that those who gain access to publishing resources gain an ascendancy over other colleagues by virtue of that, and that publishers have become very adept, in fact, at using this kind of creation of resources to divide, in effect, the scientific community. Now, once has this very good idea in mind. Imagine you're a young graduate student or a young professor, postdoc or assistant professor, and you're asking from your senior faculty, well, what should I do with my articles? Should I put them in open access? And the older professor might think to himself, well, if I were totally objective and totally all by myself and logical, I would say, yes, do it, because it's to your advantage. But then, if he does that and too many people do that, isn't there a possibility at some point that the journal of which I'm an editor is going to become superfluous, in effect, because people say, well, why should we even buy these journals? They are now, and all these articles are in the institutional archives. Let's forget about these journals. And there is a kind of, you know, hidden crisis in the whole scenario that Stéphane has developed, which is, as I hope it does, the journals do develop as the institutional repositories develop in open access. At some point, libraries are going to say there is no need to buy these journals anymore. We really have access to all of that. We are going to, he's putting me to some...
Number 17.
Number 17, okay. And we'll have to deal with the value creation, because the journals won't be existing anymore. Now, of course, all this, and Stéphane is right to say, this is speculation. It's historical anticipation. But when that young professor addresses that question to his senior faculty, there is a fair chance he'll hear that kind of objection. And the question we have to raise is, how do we work against this kind of Zeno's paralysis, which is put inside the institutions, which has to do with people in power trying, perhaps wrongly, but trying to protect their power base?
Okay, we have to leave the podium to the others. Thanks, Jean-Claude, Stephen, Kukun, and thanks to the audience. Bye.